It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul and Mary Jo are here the day before Thanksgiving. Passwords go bye-bye in your Microsoft account. We'll talk about Windows 10 and ARM. And the RIP tour for Cortana continues. Plus a little Xbox news is all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 596, recorded Wednesday, November 21st, 2018. Redmond, Freude. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/windows. And by Prilock Security. Teach your employees how to keep your company secure by avoiding phishing emails, candy drops, and social engineering. Show them how and why hackers attack with training by Prilock. Go to prilock.com/twit and use the promo code Leo to save 30%. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Redmondo, Washingtonio, the home of Microsoft. And given it's the day before Thanksgiving, or as some wag put it, Thanksgiving Eve. That sounds like a Paul Thurrott.
Yeah.
'Twas the night before Thanksgiving and all through the podcast.
We'll keep it short today. Paul, you're still in Lower Macungie Valley?
Yes, I am.
Okay. But Mary Jo has taken the train, the Polar Express.
Yep.
To cold parts unknown.
Mary Jo, if it helps, it's actually worse to take the train in the opposite direction from New York.
Yeah. So you have something to look forward to then.
Awesome. Yeah, as bad as your trip may have been, it could have been worse.
I'm going to edit your title and replace NYC with KEY.
Podcaster Emeritus.
M-O-U-S-E. You're in Rhode Island, right?
I am. Yep.
Up the road a piece from Mom. Mm-hmm. And you're doing the Turkey Day tomorrow?
We are. How fun. With all the foliage. All the foliage.
So you got off in Providence then, did you? Or somewhere else in?
No, I got off in Kingston.
Kingston. Okay. Nice.
Paul's an expert on the highways.
Oh, yeah. No, I've taken it hundreds of times. I just drove back to Boston, not last weekend, but the weekend before. And I normally go a different direction, but this time I went 95 both ways. So I actually drove through Providence for the first time in quite a while.
I do feel like spending Thanksgiving in Providence and the state of Rhode Island and Providence Plantations is a good kind of traditional thing to do. Plymouth Rock is just a scant few miles away.
It is.
Yeah, Roger Williams fled to your area to find religious freedom.
Religious freedom, by the way, from Dedham.
From Dedham.
Really?
Is that true? Is that where the pilgrims were?
Not exactly, but the...
Wow. Dedham?
Not exactly.
No,
close. But Dedham used to be everything outside of Boston.
Oh, really? It was called Dedham?
Yeah, from Rhode Island all the way up to Maine was Dedham. So they was fleeing that part of...
For a dead hamlet. Outside is the dead hamlet.
I think they named it after the first winter where two-thirds of the pilgrims, didn't make it.
The rest had ham.
They're like, we need a name for this place.
Dead ham.
That's what I'm having for Thanksgiving, oddly enough, tomorrow.
Oh, you are? You have ham?
I have a 15-pound Vermont-cured corncob-smoked Harrington's ham.
Oh, brother.
And because I miss the old days, I'm going to I'm going to brine it in apple cider.
Wow. Yeah.
So it'll taste pretty good. It should be good. And then I made... To celebrate my ethnic roots, which I know because I've done my DNA.
I was going to say, pray tell, what ethnic roots are those, Leo?
Notice the schnoz. I made two, not one, but two lasagnas, one green, one red.
Wow.
One pesto, one bolognese. So
sounds good.
We're going to have an odd Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Because that's it.
Sounds delicious.
No
sounds
sides,
good.
Nothing. I think
we
it
like
sounds
Thanksgiving
good.
So much, we're doing it twice.
Really?
Yeah, my son's coming home today, so we're going to do a dinner tonight with just the four of us.
Oh,
and then
that's so sweet.
This year, we'll be at my sister's house, so we'll have a I think like 25 people or some crazy thing.
Is she also in Lower Macungie Valley?
Yes. Yeah, I've got two sisters right up the street.
Oh, that's convenient. So you
street
here is
more of a country lane kind of a thing. But yeah, it's yeah.
Or well, maybe you'll take the ATV.
We'll take the Amish buggy up the street.
Yeah. Yeah, nice. It does feel like you're in a more Thanksgiving-y place than I am.
Yeah.
But you know, we'll do our best to decorate with autumnal colors. We put Christmas lights up, but one of the balls already fell off. I have to get up on a ladder or something.
Oh,
which was the whole point of having some other people do it.
Yep.
But they didn't do it well. Mm-hmm. We should probably talk about, you know, some Microsoft
Windows stuff. Or something.
I don't know. Yesterday talked a lot about passwords on Security Now because Troy Hunt, who does HaveIBeenPwned.com, wrote a piece about passwords about 2 weeks ago in which he basically said, forget it, we're stuck with them. But I remember Bill Gates saying we wouldn't be, that passwords would be a thing of the past someday. Which is it?
Well, it's on its way, for sure. I mean, one thing, anyone who uses a computer of any kind has probably noticed that the instances in which you have to type in a password have gone down dramatically, right, through a variety of functions. 2FA helps a lot like that. Pins, obviously, on computers are kind of nice if you have a Windows computer. You know, Windows Hello and so forth. I mean, and even like the first time you sign on to a Windows PC, you can, I believe, I haven't done this since Saturday, but I do this like
use the authenticator. No, it pops up on your phone.
Right, exactly.
You don't even have to enter password. You just approve. Yep. And I think they give
Google
you a two-digit
number.
I like that a lot.
I do too. Yeah.
I don't want to enter passwords. And that's probably it's probably a little more secure than a password because it's, you know, you have to have my phone if you're going to do it.
Yeah, there's multiple factors occurring there. It's nice. But, you know, Microsoft's goal, like you said, has been for a long time to get to kind of a password-less world. And they took a step in that direction this week when they released, what happened was it kind of quietly happened with the Microsoft account. I think it was late last week. They didn't say anything about it, but it was up there on the site if you thought to go look for it. If you go to account.microsoft.com and go to the security section, advanced options, you kind of scroll down and there's sections in there for app passwords and some other things. And they added a new section related to using Windows Hello or a security key like the YubiKey. And it has to be FIDO2 compatible, et cetera, et cetera. But basically, once you configure your account with, I use the key in this case, you can use that to sign into devices that are compatible. Obviously,
without Windows any passwords, you just put it in the USB port and...
So depending on the key and how things work, there could be a fingerprint reader on it that you could have a PIN associated with it. And so in my case, I plugged it in, typed in a PIN, and I was in.
That's good. So it's two-factor. Because it's the key and the number that you know. Huh.
Right. And it works on inside of Windows. It works in Microsoft Edge right now. I tried it with the Chrome. It's not there, but I'm sure they'll be adding this. And so what that means is if you go to, you know, Outlook.com or OneDrive.com or whatever, and you have to sign into your account, you could be authenticated off of the key now. Or, again, off of Windows Hello, which is useful if you have a Windows Hello biometric login type on your computer.
So does this work with business apps also or no at this point?
So this is for MSA specifically, so the Microsoft account. That said, I could be wrong, but I think this might already be available on business accounts. I could be wrong about that, but this sounds like the type of thing that would come to MSA last in a way because it's maybe a little bit less common. Although Windows Hello makes it pretty common, right? Obviously modern. Yeah. Windows computers do have Windows Hello. I use the security key personally just to try it because it's still kind of unique on a in a consumer scenario or whatever.
So let's talk about security. When you're logging into your computer, I mean, there's a certain amount of security built in the fact that you have the physical access to the computer, right? Mm-hmm. So all of these methods assume you have physical access. I'm starting with Hello's face recognition. Has Microsoft said anything about how secure that is? Is it secure or less secure or more secure than Apple's Face ID? And you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I don't know that anyone's made that comparison, I would say Windows Hello facial recognition has had a pretty good reputation. I think there was one incident fairly recently where somebody somehow was able to bypass it, but it's been around
Apple's
for a while.
Apple's Face ID has this problem with siblings and other close relatives that it can, you know, they said identical twins, but even brothers who look a lot alike can fool it. And I talked to one mom whose
that's
kid
where
could
all that money went.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Dad. I'll be right there. I'm just going to run upstairs and steal everything.
Just going to look up the weather in your computer.
Yeah.
I've never heard anybody say that is a problem with Hello, though. Have you?
Which is interesting. But that's a good question. I mean, no.
No.
So that's weird.
I think there was an incident this past year, but I don't know how serious it was. But no, generally no. And then, of course, fingerprint readers have been a thing for a long time.
Yeah, and Apple
says part of Windows Hello.
And of course, this is all marketing speak, but Apple says their Face ID is a lot more secure. I can't remember what the number was, but like several orders of magnitude more secure than Touch ID. I don't know if that's true if your brother can unlock it. That seems like a flaw. And then in both Apple's case and Microsoft's case, you have to have more than just a regular camera. They have a depth sensing camera.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It has to have an IR and there's all kinds of things. It's
similar,
a special kind
similar
of.
Similar to the notchy thing on Apple's devices.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, it's interesting that Microsoft hasn't really made any claims one way or the other. Now, I think the most secure would, of course, be a token, a YubiKey or something like that. Because, nobody could get into your computer at all unless they had the physical key. And since you have to have a PIN, too, that's pretty secure. I would imagine corporations would like that.
Yeah, and this is kind of a modern version of the old smart cards we used to see. Those kind of credit card sized shaped things that you would slot into an enterprise class PC.
Yeah, I carry. I don't know why, but I carry. poor Mary, I'm going to turn off your microphone.
She's all choked up.
Yeah, I carry a YubiKey for no apparent reason on my keychain, just in case. You know.
You know they have NFC versions of this. Obviously, there's. USB-C versions of this as well. I mean, there's probably five or six different versions.
But there's a variety of them. The way the early ones worked, and they're kind of indistinguishable from these more modern ones, but the early ones worked by doing a human interface device, HID, and appearing as a keyboard on the USB port, and then you'd press the button and it would type a long string. But that was just a single string. The more modern ones do one-time passwords. They have a little bit of processing power in there, and they can generate a time-based one-time password, which is long and very strong.
Right.
And then, as you said, yes, some of them have NFC, and that's necessary on – obviously, you can't stick that in a phone because it's type A USB, so that's necessary on a – on a smartphone, especially iPhones, because iPhones have to do Bluetooth because they don't allow NFC authentication.
You know, this is only semi-related, but there was a story in the paper today about Sweden is a country that's moving to become a cashless society very quickly, which is something we witnessed this past year. Actually, cash is not accepted anywhere. And some people are thinking this is going too fast and they're trying to put the brakes on it. But as part of the story, apparently, I don't know if the number is if it's 2,000 or 20,000 or some number of people in Sweden have gotten a chip implanted in their hand so that when they get on the metro system, the train, they can wave it in front of the machine and just go through.
Wow.
They don't even bring out they don't even have a card.
That's a convenience.
That's incredible, right? Yeah. So you could kind of imagine this type of thing, what we're talking about here, I mean, evolving to be something like that. I mean, obviously, facial recognition is one thing. I mean, you are who you are. But, you can imagine like a company requiring you to have an implant in your hand, so you can get in the building or whatever, or get onto your computers.
I think this is a good thing. I really do. I'm happy to see Microsoft do this. I think it's really driven by corporate, right? Business computing, because they want more security. They'd love to issue, an employee a token. What happens if you lose the token?
Yeah, then you're screwed. No, I mean, you have multiple options for doing these kinds of things. So, yeah. For example, on my secondary Google account, which I've still not brought back into the phone sign-in world for whatever reason, when I do have to authenticate that account, it comes up with those secondary choices that I've set up. And so one of them is I can text my cell phone, and then they get a code. I type that in. And so on the Microsoft side, it's kind of interesting. When they do that, you actually have to provide the last four digits of your phone number before they'll even send you a code. And they won't tell you if it was right. With the Google one, you just say, I just want a code, and it will send it to the phone, whatever the number is you configured. But in both cases, you can type in that code. But there's authenticator apps. And
that SMS. So one thing that is true and is that, and Steve always says this, is that whatever the lowest common denominator of authentication is, whatever the fallback is, you know, yeah. is the weakest link, because you can always, a hacker can always say, well, I don't have my key. And if they can, SMS is not a great way to do one-time passwords, because it's easy to spoof or steal.
Yeah, I don't actually, so I'm sorry, I think you would actually have to provide your password before you were granted that choice, right?
Right, right. So the password plus SMS.
The thing we're describing here is kind of new because, at least in the consumer world, because your password is never occurring, you know?
Right.
You can, with this thing, plug it into a computer, press the button, or type in a PIN, I guess, and go. And, you know, the username and password are both the two things that are occurring for you. A lot of consumer scenarios, if it's Gmail or Outlook.com, whatever it might be, you sign into the site, or you log into a Chromebook or an Android device or a Windows PC. Typically, until now at least, you have had to type in your username and password. And then if you have a second, you know, a 2FA configured, which you should, then you'll be prompted for that, whatever it might be.
Right.
Phone-based prompt, SMS, whatever.
I would just point out whatever that fallback. If they allow SMS, that's not the most strong kind of two-factor.
Right.
Actually, when you do the super-duper Google, you know, which nobody does because it completely eliminates half of the stuff you want to do. When you do that, you can't use an SMS recovery.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because we're always
it's super duper. Yeah. That's why you have
to
have
two keys.
It's kind of
this line between secure and
convenience.
Convenience. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean how secure you need to be, but gosh, there's a Steve's knock at level 3.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do three things. You need a password. It does an iris scan. It does a hand scan. Maybe four things. I think you need to do it one time. You have to have a dongle as well.
So then, like a guy comes down from the ceiling on a rope, and if he raises
DNA.
The temperature in the room 1 degree, it's not going to work.
So there are different levels, obviously, of security. Well, we milked that one pretty good. Well, we only have four points.
I think it's a big story. I mean,
no,
it's
anything that replaces passwords is huge.
Yeah, and people listening to this today, you know, for a lot of people, this is something that's not going to happen immediately. But in the same way that, you know, Windows Hello kind of happened, and then over time, it became a part of, obviously, Microsoft's computers and some other computers as well. It just becomes this thing you kind of look back on and like, how did we use these things before? It's so terrible. It's like when you go to a Mac that doesn't have Touch ID on it, which, by the way, they should have Face ID too. But, you know, the MacBook Pros, they don't even have a PIN in this system. So if you don't have an Apple Watch, which is the only really convenient way to sign into those systems, you have to configure a local password. And then you have to type the password and hit enter every time you want to sign in. It's really ponderous, you know. So the MacBook Air finally has a touch sensor, a Touch ID. But they should all have this Face ID thing. We've had this in Windows since Windows 8, I think, right? And we've had pins actually also since Windows 8. It's awful going back to not having that stuff, you know, once you've experienced it. So someday, I don't know that we'll all be walking around with keys exactly, but some of us will, and some of us will just be using cameras.
Well, and then Google's trying to figure out other forms of authentication, like, you know, your gait. The way you bounce around when you carry your phone is unique to you and you alone.
Nice.
Doing, yep. Doing.
We will let you into your account if you will share one childhood memory that we can monetize through advertising.
There you go. Actually, the funny thing is, at roughly the same time when they announced this, there was a two-factor issue with Office 365.
Yeah. It was, I wondered if those two things were connected, like if they were doing something on the back end that made this happen. But on, what day was it? Yesterday, right? Yesterday, starting in Asia, then Europe, then the US, many people who use two-factor authentication with Azure and Office 365 could not get into their accounts.
Oh, that sucks.
At all.
Oh.
Like they weren't getting the prompts, you know, like they weren't getting anything when they were pinging it, nothing came back. Like they weren't even getting a notification on their phones. So there was just no way for them to even try to go around it because they most people don't have a setup where they have kind of a backup situation in place. And this went on for more than 12 hours. Microsoft applied a hotfix on their end, but it took a really long time to propagate. And they still haven't said what was the root cause of this. It started with Azure and then spread to Office 365, it seemed like. But there's been no kind of, and here's what happened. So just many people, especially in Europe and Asia, were down almost all day yesterday because of this.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Good reason to go home.
And those people are leaving.
Take the day off.
Yeah, people are like, bye, I'm out. I don't know what to do. Like, I'm stuck now.
What do you want me to write with a pencil and paper like an animal?
Right. What are we doing here?
Spreadsheets on paper?
Draw something on the side of this cave while we're at it?
Come on, man. Wow. Yeah. Did they ever say why?
Nope.
No.
So far, no why has been shared. Huh. So
I wonder the same, though, if it wasn't related to this because it's obviously some kind of back-end change that enables this. You actually do it through the web browser, through Microsoft Edge.
I don't like it when stuff like this happens because it encourages people to turn off two-factor.
So many people started saying, well, I'm just not going to use this anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And, that's too bad.
I know.
Yep.
I've been asked by the AARP magazine to write an article on this subject.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah?
Well, I pitched them anyway. They said, can you talk about this? I said, can I talk about this? But then what they do...
Try to stop me.
They do. They pay a lot, too. But what they do, and not that I'm doing it for the money, I'm doing it because I like old people like me. That's what they said. They said, well, because our audience kind of identifies with excuse tweets. But
you're like, thanks.
We're what they call death adjacent.
Yeah, death adjacent. That's it. Well, it's true. When you talk in television, you know, they television land or even radio land, they talk, well, you know, what's your 18 to 25? What's your 25 to 54? Mm-hmm. And then after 54, we don't. It's fine.
They're not buying
50. It's 54 plus. Sure. It's like, yeah, we don't care about those people.
Yeah.
54 plus is uncomfortably close, Leo.
Well, can I tell you, I resent that because people over 54 probably spend more money than anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know why, you know, advertisers always want that, the kids. I guess because if they hook them young, they can keep them for life.
Right. Or they get their parents' money, right?
Yeah. Sure. I feel like the mature audience.
Mm-hmm.
The mature, sophisticated audience is a good consumer.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right, let's take a little break consumer-wise, and then we shall go to some Windows 10 news. And fear not, there is an Xbox story buried deep within.
Woo!
Woo! Our show today brought to you by the number one mortgage lender in the country. Say it with me. I know you all know it. Quicken Loans, the creators of Rocket Mortgage. You get points if you said either one of those. Number one in many ways, by the way. Number one now for 9 years in a row. They just got the award for 2018 from J.D. Power for customer satisfaction in two different areas. 9 years straight without a break for customer satisfaction and mortgage origination. And they also have got the 2018 award for mortgage servicing. I mean, this is a company that customers love. And that's good because that means you get a lot of repeat business. You get a lot of referral business. And it's one of the reasons Quicken Loans is now the number one lender in the country in terms of volume as well as customer satisfaction. It all goes hand in hand. It all meshes perfectly. It's also why they created Rocket Mortgage, because they wanted to make us happy. See, nobody, I don't think anybody really wants to go into the bank. Maybe some people do and fill out a long form and, you know, then go to the attic and get paperwork like bank statements and pay stubs. I don't. And I think people of our ilk would rather do everything online, right? I'd shop for the holidays online. I do everything online. I bought my ham online. So why would I not want to get a mortgage online? And that's what Rocket Mortgage is, an entirely online mortgage approval process. It's pretty darn awesome. It starts at rocketmortgage.com/windows. If you use that special address, by the way, then they'll know you heard it here. rocketmortgage.com/windows. That's good for us. When you do that, just go create an account. And then when it's time, you know, you want to buy a house or you start, actually really do it when you're starting to look for a house. You do this three-step thing they call the power buying process. So the first thing is replaces going to the bank. They ask you a few simple questions you already know the answer to: name, address, birth date, things, social, things like that. And then they go and they get a credit report on you. And based on that, they say, here's the loans you qualify for. You choose the term, the rate, the down payment. And within, you know, usually most cases about 10 minutes, you're going to get pre-qualified approval. That's a really great place to start. Now you can start house hunting. And actually, without your doing anything else in most cases, the next step happens automatically. Within the next 24 hours, a loan officer will take all the, you know, information. They'll verify your income, your assets, and your credit. And once they've got all that, they say, we give you verified approval. That's the next step up. In fact, they even give you a letter. You can give your realtor or actually the seller, if you want to make an offer on a house, that says they're good for it. You're a cash buyer, basically. There's no contingency. There's no, well, we want to buy this house, but maybe only if we get the loan kind of thing, which frankly, most people buying houses do that. You know, it's a contingency. And most sellers don't want that. They want somebody who says, yeah, we got the money. That's exactly what Rocket Mortgage does. Once you get the verified approval, you qualify for their all new exclusive Rate Shield approval that locks your rate. Another stress point is, you know, interest rates have been going up. That means the house cost is going to go up by a lot over the 30 years of the loan. So what Quicken Loans is doing is they're saying, well, we're going to guarantee your rate. We're going to lock it in. And even if rates go up, yours won't. You have up to 90 days to find a house, 90 days to shop without any concern about rates going up. Actually, it's nice. It's even better than that, because if rates go down, your rate will go down. It just can't go up. It's locked. That's called Rate Shield Approval, and it's exactly why Quicken Loans and Rocket Mortgage is America's number one mortgage lead lender. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/windows. Rate Shield Approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. They're an equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. All you have to remember is rocketmortgage.com/windows. Windows Weekly, Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. I'm sorry about your cold. Did you get that on Amtrak? Is that an Amtrak?
Okay. No,
can you touch surfaces on the train?
Don't touch anything.
No, listen, what do you guys think of this? So I had a little cold, and then I went to the doctor this week for my physical, and then she gave me a flu shot on top of having a cold.
No, flu shot won't make you sicker.
That won't make you sicker? No. I feel like I got way sicker after that.
A flu shot does make you sick, yeah.
No, it's dead. It's killed.
No, it's. I know. I think the way a flu shot works is it gives you the flu.
Is it live? Oh.
Yeah.
Well, wow. I don't know, but I was kind of on the road to recovery. And after I had that shot, I'm like, and now I'm sick again. What the heck?
Where's Dr. Mom? See,
I just
we need
get sick.
Her?
I have a teenager in my house, so I'm just sick all the time.
That's true. Yeah.
Well, I hate to say it's live because I don't, or it'll make you sick because I don't want anybody to not take it. Unlike the flu shot.
No, you need to get it.
Okay, the flu shot is dead.
Right.
Okay.
So, I don't know if that's true, but okay.
But the nasal spray flu vaccine, known as the live attenuated influenza vaccine, or LAVE, does contain live influenza viruses, but the viruses are attenuated, weakened, so they will not make you ill. So,
okay.
No.
I had the shot.
Mary Jo is patient zero in the new zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, like, actually,
it's going to go on for Thanksgiving. Give it all our relatives. They're all going to go back to wherever they're from.
Make you sick. That's for sure.
I feel like I get sick every time I go to the doctor's office.
Yeah, there's sick people at the doctor's office. You're going where the viruses
gather. You're sitting next to a guy who has some kind of hantavirus. So he doesn't know what's going on. And then you bring it out into the world.
The CDC, the Center for Disease Control, one of the last trusted groups in government, says flu vaccines cannot cause flu illness.
Okay.
If they get them with a needle, which you did, a shot.
I did.
Yep.
Yep.
They're inactivated, killed, cannot, they're not infectious.
Okay.
No matter what Paul Thurrott says.
Leo, they would say that. No, I didn't.
They would say that. Of course they would. They're doctors.
Man, when you live in New York, you want to get the flu vaccine. I'm telling you, you're exposed to so many.
I'm worried. I haven't gotten mine yet, and that means I'm open.
Yeah.
I'm vulnerable.
You are.
And guess where I'm going in 2 weeks?
I know. You better get your shot.
New York, New York. The toddle in town. I know how to get around because the Bronx is up and the battery's down. The people ride around in a hole in the ground. Rattling hum is gone for good. New York, New York.
Too soon, Leo.
too soon. Shouldn't joke about
way
that.
Way too soon.
That's why you're sick.
I did go to the party last night.
Oh,
I did.
Mary Jo, she's worried about the flu shot. She went to the rattling hum party.
How could I not go?
We have multiple suspects, is what I'm saying.
Was it a wake?
No, it was actually really fun.
Oh.
And everybody was upbeat but sad.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like they're gone for good.
Well, sure, but they're trunks. I mean, what else would they be?
They're trunks. They're Irish. What do you expect?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Half of them are going to come back next week and be confused of why this place was closed.
Oh, no,
we just
kidding.
Had a great party here.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry that it's Rattle and Hum is Rattle and Hum West.
East is gone. West is staying. Gone.
West is still there. Yeah. Okay. But West is not near you.
Well, not that far.
Oh. Well,
when are they going to open Rattle and Hum Lehigh Valley?
Yeah.
I know. Well, Paul, it's in your hands.
Business opportunity.
Oh, could you franchise it?
He might.
Rattle and Hum PA.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They had Fort Lauderdale, and then they closed it. It didn't last, but they did have Rattle and Hum Fort Lauderdale.
This place is more German than Irish, I guess.
Yeah, your place, where you are, it is, right?
So I actually have a question about Windows for you. If you're,
do you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if you.
Oh, yeah.
we all got the HP NVX2 with Windows on ARM. It was the Snapdragon 835, was it? I think it was.
Yep, that's right.
And all noted that it was pretty slow. So slow that mine's just kind of sitting in the corner.
Yeah.
Sad. I actually removed the SIM card and the memory card from it the other day.
Wow.
Well, thinking I'm
that's a funeral of its own kind.
It is. Mm-hmm. It'll limp along, but not as good. So, yeah. And one of the things we talked about at the time was it's 32-bit Windows.
Yep.
And that 64 was going to come along. In fact, now it is.
Well, okay.
Is
so
that
actually,
faster? Oh, okay. We'll clarify.
The operating system itself was 64-bit. It is 64-bit.
Ah, Windows, the apps.
Windows 10 on ARM. Yeah. It can only run, as it was first released, it could only run 32-bit apps, period, whether they were Intel x86 running under emulation or store apps. And so there's a couple problems there. A lot of store apps are 64-bit Intel apps, and those are never going to run on the system no matter what they do unless something dramatic changes that we're not privy to. what they've added this week, and they had announced this. I bet they announced this back at Build, probably, I'm going to guess. But this we knew this was coming, was the ability for developers to target ARM64 in the store. And then also to create with Visual Studio ARM64 apps that you could put out in the world on the internet. You know, so if I'm trying to think of an example, I don't know. It doesn't really matter what the example is, but you know, any application that compiles to Intel as x86 or x64, you could conceive if you wanted to make a native ARM version of that in 64-bit mode. And the theory there is that it would run better because it's native to the platform. So it doesn't honestly. This doesn't change too much.
Okay.
And it doesn't change the biggest issues with the platform, which are performance and then compatibility, because there was no like world of 64-bit ARM apps that we didn't have. And it doesn't solve the 64-bit Intel apps, which is the real problem. So I always use this as the example, but Photoshop Elements is a desktop application. It's available through the store thanks to the desktop bridge. It's 64-bit. It's not going to work on ARM. I don't think it ever will.
Huh. Now, Anontech, Roland passed along to me in the chat room a link to Anontech, Andre Frumosano wrote a piece yesterday saying that the new Cortex A76 ARM platform is actually twice as fast as the previous platform.
So about 10 days from now, Qualcomm's going to have their annual Snapdragon Summit. And at that event, I am sure that they will announce the successor to the 850, which I think right now is, they're calling it the 1000. I think it's going to have a different name than that, but it's supposed to be a significant performance improvement over the original chipset.
He did his benchmarks with the Kirin chip from Huawei, the 980, which is also based on the A76.
Okay, so actually, if he's comparing it to a Kirin
980, but what's interesting,
that might be something for smartphones, not for the PC.
Yeah, yeah. But he does talk about the fact that Qualcomm's platform is coming. This Kirin is a 7-nanometer part. I have to say that when I'm looking at his Geekbench scores anyway, that the Apple A12 just whoops it. And actually, even the A10 whoops it. So,
All right. So, actually, let's go down a little bit of a sidetrack here because you mentioned that. And I think this is kind of – I didn't put this in the notes. I almost did. But I don't know if it was last week or the week before we were talking about the MacBook Air and how it has a Y-series Intel Core processor. It's dual-core 8th generation.
Yep.
We've had a – anyone who reviews laptops or has used one of these dogs in the past knows that – anything that was Core M or Y series in the past has been terrible.
This one's so pretty good. Hear that, I have to say I have it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was my point. So
they kind of beefed it up for Apple. It's a 7-watt part.
Yeah, it's a 7-watt part. It has a fan, so it's good to dissipate heat, so probably the turbo boost can last longer.
Yeah.
In my use, and I can't, well, I have some theories about this now, but at the time I couldn't attribute it to the part or the Mac OS that may or may not be more efficient than Windows. It's, you know, but I think the new MacBook Air works great. So
yeah, I was surprised. Since then, I'm pleased, actually, because I like the form factor a lot.
Yeah. Since then, I've gotten an HP Folio in, a Spectre Folio. That's the one that is
the leather one?
Wrapped in leather.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
So here's the thing.
So jealous.
That computer also uses a Y series part. In fact, it's from the same family of processors as the version in the MacBook Air. Now, they don't have fan-based cooling, right? So there's none of that. It probably can't hit the same, you know, turbo boosts or, you know, whatever. It's not a 7-watt part. But in talking to HP about this, they were like, look, you know, a lot of people like to use Geekbench or these other benchmarks, but those things are really processor, CPU dependent. And the truth is, for productivity tasks, you kind of need to look elsewhere, because you could do, like, one of the tests I'd do is I'll, like, encoded a 4K video with Handbrake, and it's super dependent on the CPU. And it's not something that normal people do with, like, a, you know, typical laptop, so whatever. Obviously, if you're going to do video encoding, you're not buying one of these low-end computers. You're buying something, you know, a MacBook Pro or a high-end Windows laptop, whatever. So they recommended that I try PCMark and test it that way. Now, we can't do that on ARM. I think PCMark is x86 and it's Windows only. But I think the problem with benchmarks is, you see this thing in the Apple world a lot. You talk about A-series chips and how they blow away everything from Qualcomm or whoever else. But, you know, real day-to-day real-world use, I mean, the truth is, as you use the machine, the iPhone or the Android phone, whatever it is, you know, you don't really notice a performance thing. Like, it's not like Apple iPhones run twice as fast as, you know, Google Pixels or something. It's not like that. So I'm curious if there's a way to better benchmark how these things work in the real world, you know. And, you know, Windows 10 on ARM, it's tough because you are going to be running a lot of x86 apps unless something really changes, you know. And so, like, a 2x performance boost on that system, you know, you're like, is that actually meaningful? Like, it's kind of hard to say because it's so slow right now. It's possible that 2x would just make it barely usable. You know, I don't know. But I do know from my experience with the Spectre Folio that it actually does suffer from some of those problems I used to have with Core M machines or Y-series machines in the past, which is that when you first started doing something on it, syncing OneDrive for the first time, installing Microsoft Office, it goes pretty slow. In day-to-day use, once you get the thing up and running, it's great. It's fine.
You know, it's funny because that's the time when on a fan-based computer, the fans get really when I'm first setting up a computer, it goes whatever it is that's going on there does take a lot of horsepower.
But yeah, and actually
you don't
hear
those fans again later, so
right. On the MacBook Air, when I did do like that handbrake encoding test, that thing sounded like a pissed off cobra for like 2 hours straight. It just you know, the fan just went to town because that's not really what that's for.
Right.
So I don't know. You know, the ARM stuff is fascinating to me. I'm curious to see where they go with this. Performance boost is so necessary, and we'll see where it lands. But there's just that other thing, you know, about compatibility, and I'm curious how or if they can solve that. I talked to Qualcomm, and they've said they've talked to Adobe, for example, and they're like, guys, all you got to do is flip a switch in the compiler. I think it's a little more complicated than that, but you know, Adobe Photoshop is a big program, and unfortunately, if you use it, you probably know that a lot of those things that come up, like when I do something like save for web, that window that comes up wasn't even made by Adobe. It's a third party app. It's actually another app,
really,
and it converts. Yeah, it has its own performance and weirdnesses. You know, it's a whole nother thing, and so I suspect that porting Photoshop, even Photoshop Elements, you know, to ARM. Is a tough task. Now, although they are doing it on the iPad.
Remind me, do I have to use XS if I'm using ARM?
No. Yeah, Leo, the good news for now is no one has to use XS.
Oh, XS doesn't exist anymore, right?
Well, it's not really.
It still exists. It's on the Surface Go, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It still
I always turn it off.
Until you get rid of it. Yeah, exactly.
Get rid of it.
Yeah. It's funny, though, just this week we were having a debate with some people on Twitter. I think Paul saw this today, too, where people are still asking, why didn't the Surface Go ship with an ARM processor? Like, this comes up a lot, right? And the reason is it's not ready, right? I mean,
well, but we also heard Intel begged Microsoft.
Yeah, I'm not so sure that's true. But
I can see them doing it. Please don't do that. Please.
I don't have numbers in front of me, but part of that – actually, it wasn't that conversation. It was a different conversation on Twitter.
Somebody
was talking about, you know, like true quad core eighth generation processors, the i5, the i7, versus dual core Y series eighth generation processors. And isn't the Pentium Gold that's in the Surface Go kind of in the same league? And it's like, no, it's not. If you look at the benchmarks for those products side by side. You know, like PCMark Bench for productivity tasks, the Y series and the normal I series are actually pretty close. The Pentium Gold is 1/4. You know, it's not even close.
Should be the Pentium and Lead.
Yeah, but you know what? Well, it's probably still better
than an ARM.
Than an ARM today.
I think so.
That's something I think is going to change.
It's also way cheaper. I bet.
Yeah, I bet you're right.
Right.
It's not. I think the other thing to point out, it's important to remember, is that designing a chip isn't as simple as saying, "Oh, well, this chip's faster," you know, because it's got faster clock speed or the microcode is faster. A lot of it has to do with the chip design. One of the reasons Apple can get so much performance out of its chips is because they make the hardware, and they can tailor the system on a chip to exactly what that hardware and software combo is going to look like.
Right.
And a general purpose. So like the Qualcomm chips really were designed for phones.
Oh, they were literally designed for phones. But the big thing that's changed over the past year, you mentioned the ARM Cortex, I think it was A76.
Yeah.
The ARM consortium or whatever it is, the chip designers that kind of come up with the underlying platform. And then also Qualcomm itself have both adapted to this changing world where these chipsets are going to be used in a variety of different device types. And so they're actually coming out with special chipset families to accommodate those different workloads.
Right.
So the 835 was the version that they used in phones. The 850 was a little bit modified. The next one, the 1000 or whatever they call it, will be specifically designed for PCs, and it could have a dramatic improvement.
That's right.
Yeah, so they have wearable chipsets now. They have chipsets for routers and Internet of Things devices. You know, they're kind of branching out. It's kind of what Intel had to do many years ago. It's the reason we still have Pentium and Y series and, you know, Core I, whatever, and Xeon and whatever else we have.
Mm-hmm. Look forward to it.
May I give you a quick update on that MFA story?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, they just posted to their admin health center preliminary root cause analysis.
Oh.
A recent update to improve connections to the caching services for MFA introduced an issue that prevented users from being able to sign in or carry out self-service password resets when using MFA. So this could have been related to them ramping up for the FIDO MFA stuff that they announced later in the week.
Kind of a coincidence, if not. Yeah.
Kind of a coincidence, yeah.
You know,
just thought you'd like to know.
There were, and it's not been explained yet. There were significant outages yesterday. LastPass, Instagram, Facebook. A number of sites were down yesterday morning for a significant amount of time.
Yeah.
Sure.
And never has been explained to us. I mean, I think it might be there's some commonality, like they all use S3 or something, but
maybe or you're going to wake up tomorrow and get an ad for signing up for Baidu.
Yeah.
And see how that goes.
Yeah. Could be. I mean, these things go down.
They do.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, LastPass going down is kind of actually, it's not as scary as MFA going down because at least you still have the
but
local.
It is,
you have the local.
It's in there, isn't it?
But, yeah, it's not great.
You know what? Given how connected we are and how we're kind of coming around to how terrible that can be, we should celebrate these opportunities.
A lot of this stuff assumes that we're always connected, always on, and always available.
Yeah.
You know, when I was in Europe, I noticed a number of apps that really misbehaved when internet connectivity was spotty.
Yes, that's right. Because you kind of take it for granted,
and so do these apps. They just say, "Oh no, you're not going to be what you're," and they don't handle it well. I had one app basically forgot everything it knew about me.
Even by the way, even mainstream apps. I can cite two examples I've seen that I still see regularly, like Audible and Google Play Music. You do something as simple as get on a plane.
Yeah.
And you put the thing in airplane mode, it kind of freaks out a little bit. It's like, whoa, you're not connected to anything. It's like, yeah,
isn't that funny?
It's okay. I'm playing something on the phone. You're going to be fine. Like, I have to go in and flip a switch in the app to tell them to calm down. Like, it's kind of a weird thing. You know, I mean, this is like when an app is written in a bubble, you know.
Mm-hmm. It is odd. It's like all the websites that are designed for 20-year-old eyes.
Yes.
Like, just get some people who aren't always on. Maybe they'll know what it's like.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. So good. Well, now maybe that is proximate cause. Speaking of ARM, I hear some good news about Chrome on ARM.
So it looks like Microsoft and Google are working together to possibly bring Chrome to ARM, Windows on ARM.
This was rumored. Talking about this.
This was rumored. Yep. There was an engineer, I think, who worked at Qualcomm who said something. And then there was a big debate. Did he mean that Chrome was actually going to work natively on ARM, or did he mean something else? But 9to5 Google found some commits recently from Microsoft employees to Chromium. And it looks like add Windows ARM 64 is coming based on those commits.
So let's talk about what that means, right?
Right.
Because Chrome is a desktop application. You acquire it from the internet.
Right. It's not going to be in the store, right? I mean, unless something
changes,
happen.
Although there's been, you know, we kind of speculate that might happen. But I guess the idea here is that you would go to google.com/Chrome from your Windows 10 on ARM PC. You would choose to download. You don't have to think about it. And instead of giving you the x86 version, which is what you get today, you would get the ARM 64, but whatever, ARM version.
Yeah.
So it would run natively on that computer. So it's a desktop application.
Yeah.
I don't know if they make it in C. I don't know how they make Chrome, but I know C++ is one of the ways you can do this. I don't know what it is. It doesn't really matter. But
Unicorn tears, I believe.
Yeah. Right, so maybe ARM compatible unicorn tears, and then to the user, it should be seamless. But I guess the performance would be better, right?
Yeah.
Although I think in Mary Jo, was it the ARM device or the Go device where you actually had better luck with Chrome than Edge?
Oh yeah. Well, so on Go, definitely I had better luck, and on the NVX2, I never could really get Chrome to work on that. Oh, I mean, it worked in emulation, but it just was kind of non-usable to me on that device.
Okay.
Well, I mean,
so that would make
there
it
must
that will
be
make
Chrome on ARM because they're the Chromebooks. So
yeah,
this is what I don't get.
Yeah, that's right. I don't know what the differences are when you get to Windows, you know, between how those things work. And I don't know how an ARM-based Chromebook, if that system is literally ARM or if it's emulating. I don't know anything about
knows?
It.
No one knows.
Yeah.
It's a mystery. Great big mystery. Microsoft pull Facebook. There needs to be a term. It's probably a German word with several syllables. For yep. when you do something bad,
but then you pretend
it was a mistake.
Yeah.
And apologize.
Microsoft
later.
Does this a lot.
Facebook does it all the time, but I don't. Maybe our German friends will come up with a
Redmond Freud or something.
Redmond Freud.
Right. So we're talking here about ads showing up in the built-in mail app that's in Windows 10. Although I'll tell you, this report came out last week from Aggiornamenti Lumia IT, but yeah, I had somebody, sorry. I had somebody based in Australia, I'm forgetting who it is now, say to me, this wasn't even a test. It actually showed up in our mail.
Oh
app.
No, this like, is not. This is right. This is, I think, the point of Leo's intro there.
Yeah.
It wasn't a test.
Because Microsoft's official response about this from Frank Shaw, who's head of communications, said, you know what, that feature was just an experiment and we're turning it off. So
what is this, the island of Dr. Moreau? It's just an experiment. We thought if we combined animals, you know, we'd come out with something fun on the other end. Or I guess it's animals and people. It's been a while. The point is, it's a freakish experiment. That anyone could look at from the outside and say, this is wrong.
Okay. And it also looks like, from the screenshot that I saw, that this is in the focused inbox other category where these ads were showing up. It wasn't in your main inbox. So I think a lot of people didn't even notice it because some people like me turn off focused inbox. Other people, if you never click on the other, you might not have never have seen the ad banner at the top of that.
Yep.
But I know you always call it a slippery slope. I just say I never see ads, which is true.
Well, but this is the point of the slippery slope comment, which was that way back in Windows 8 in 2012, they would put ads in those what were then called the Bing apps, which then became the MSN apps, and now whatever they are, they're just Microsoft or something. But I said, you know, once you went, those are in-box apps, right? Meaning they come in the box with Windows 8 in that case. So once you've introduced advertising into the operating system, you don't do less advertising. like you're just going to keep adding advertising. And that's what they've done.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, there's been a couple of outrages like this time, and there was another one like this. Remember when Edge would prompt you when you went to download Chrome? Hold on a second. You might want our browser.
Doesn't
instead.
It still do that? Chrome does it for sure.
No, I mean, this is before you downloaded it. Like, you actually went to the page and it was whoa, what are you doing?
As soon as you're on the page, stop it. Don't press download.
There was a lot of outrage about that. And they said, we're just
trying
this stuff.
Out.
It is, you know, we don't mean any harm.
This is very, there's got to be a word for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very lying is
lying.
The word.
Well, that's a good word. It's a very Facebooky thing to do.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's kind
anyway,
of.
Anyway, they have pulled it for now.
Yeah.
They have,
Until Windows 11.
Yeah.
The experiment, Windows 11. And, don't get people going.
Go name the experiment.
Does Microsoft go home this week? Google does. I think a lot of companies
go they're
home
not really around.
So there's nothing's good. No, no.
I think it's fair to say that the rest of the year is going to be a little slow. But this week in particular, it's going to be a little dead. Yeah. Although we did have that MSA thing on Monday. That was kind of nice. But the Windows Insider guys basically came out and said, look, we're not going to have any bills this week. Everyone's home being with their families.
Yeah, good. That's the way it should be.
I think it's good, too, because, you know, since 1809 came out, a few more bugs have kind of trickled in. So I think it's good to take a break, right?
Yeah, I think we all need a break. And honestly, for the people who are on the Windows Insider program, if they have the RS5 or whatever we're calling it now on their computers, there's been a ton of bills, honestly. I mean, I think... You know, just taking a week off is going to be okay.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
Pow. This was clearly written by Paul.
I like the heavy sigh.
I don't have my gong. I can't do it.
We need a little intro. It's time for Paul Thurrott's rant of the week.
Exactly. Actually, I think I may surprise all of you. And by all of you, I mean you two. You're talking about the quality matters thing?
Yeah, quality matters.
So I did write a couple of things, but honestly, throughout this kind of 1809 adventure we've all been on for the past 6 weeks or so, I was actually pretty quiet because I feel like I've kind of made the point already about this stuff. I whatever feelings one might have about Microsoft software development process, blah, blah, blah. I think we've all said what needs to be said. But actually, honestly, I meant this to be more of a reminder to the community of people who do use Microsoft products that, you know, the grass may always look greener, but the truth is every platform has problems. You know, you don't have to look very far to find them. And I came up with kind of a weird example with the MacBook Air, because one of the things I was really curious about in getting this machine was putting Boot Camp on it and seeing whether they have improved this software. I'd heard they had since the version I would get on my old MacBook Air. Because, you know, one of the problems with Boot Camp is that Apple, I think purposely, doesn't do a very good job of applying Windows to the disk. They do it in a very inefficient fashion, so it doesn't ever run very well. The drivers aren't particularly up to date. And you get kind of a substandard, you know, experience. So you can run Windows 10 on it, but it's not great. And I was like, maybe with the new MacBook Air, with the newer MacBook Pros as well, they have this, you know, maybe they do it differently. They don't, by the way. It's exactly the same. That was disappointing. But to find that out, I actually had to completely reset the computer because I ran into a bug. And I'm not sure if it was in disk utility or the partitioning tool or what, but I would go to, you know, in the Boot Camp wizard, you partition the disk. You can have Windows and Mac together.
Yeah.
And it would fail. Hmm. And it would say, just run disk utility and run the little wizard and you can see what's wrong. Maybe I mentioned this last year. I feel like I talked about this a little bit, but Mac OS X now uses a new file system. It's buggy. The tools haven't caught up with it. There are containers now, invisible containers, that they don't even show you by default. And if you actually go into disk utility and just delete those partitions it created, you can go back and, you're dead in the water.
No, you can't. Yeah.
And so the first time I screwed the whole thing up, and I thought, you know, there might be something physically wrong with the SSD that's causing this problem. And I researched it. I did a lot of research, tried all kinds of different things. I was able to remove the containers, by the way, and I could go back to one partition. But every time I got pretty good at it, like you would, you know, you screw something up. Not a Mac user, but, you know, I figured it out. And it would never partition the disk. And so eventually what I found, Apple support forums, official and otherwise, your only recourse here is to blow the whole thing away. And so I thought, well, I just got it the way I wanted it. All the apps, everything's configured. Screw it. I do this all the time. What's the difference? So I blew the thing away, got it back up. And the very first thing I did was I ran Boot Camp, and it worked fine. It was fine. And the only point of this story is this kind of thing happens everywhere. So I wrote about this, and some guy or some guys had written it with some form of, well, but Paul, I mean, most people don't get a Mac to run Windows. That's crazy. And who cares? This is not a big deal, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, wait, hold a second. This is like the partitioning software built in a Mac OS. Like, it's not, I'm not talking about Boot Camp runs whatever, however it runs. I don't mean Boot Camp. Apple released a file system, and its own disk utility doesn't work with it properly. I mean, it's not me. Like, this is, I'm using the software that comes in the box with Mac OS in this case. And it was just a nice little reminder because I sit here and I kind of bitch and moan about Microsoft every week. And, you know, I get a $1,700 MacBook and it's like it doesn't work properly. And, that's my only point is, you know, as I'm sure some people with wandering eyes are looking around saying, maybe I could get a Chromebook or maybe I could get a Mac or maybe I could, you know, maybe I could whatever. You can. But you know what? You're just going to trade the problems we have over here for the problems they have. That's all.
Yeah. I think in general, it's easy for us to forget how bad it used to be.
Yes.
I mean, you used to get blue screens of death daily.
All the time. Yep.
Actually, it's funny you say that because one thing I do get daily on this computer I'm using here, in fact, I'm waiting for it to happen during a podcast, but it usually happens in the morning. I'm just using the computer, and all of a sudden, the entire screen goes to static, like you used to see on a TV at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Just, wow. That's not good.
It's 4K static. It's gorgeous, but
yeah, high quality static.
The computer's working. It's just, you can't see it. Huh. So, this particular computer, it's an all-in-one. It actually has a variety of inputs. You can plug a different computer into it and use the screen for the other computer. And so what I do is I switch inputs to the non-existent other computer. It switches. It goes to sleep because there's nothing there. And then I switch the input back, and then it's fine. And I do this every single day, and I have no idea what causes this. And yes, I've just because I know I'm going to hear from people. I have installed Intel drivers. I've gone to the HP support utility. I've done everything I think you can do. In fact, I mentioned how I'm using Skype for Windows 10. The reason I am is because last weekend I blew this computer away, in part because I wanted to see if clean installing Windows would solve this problem. And I am delighted to report that it has not solved this problem. So I don't know what's wrong with it.
It's a hard computer science problem.
I'm just saying computers are, of course, frustratingly imperfect.
Are fallible.
But they're less frustratingly imperfect than they used to be, aren't they?
That is absolutely
true. They are. Yeah, no,
we're getting a little better.
Right.
Yep.
But it's easy to forget, you know, because we were so used to blue screens every day.
Yeah, I know.
We didn't pay that much attention to it.
Yep.
Listen, all the software I have now recovers so wonderfully.
Yeah, exactly.
If there is a problem where you have to kind of just turn it off and come back, Chrome brings back all your tabs, you know, like everything, yeah, you know, everything is auto saved. It's just, yeah.
I think things are generally better.
Oh, for sure.
But not perfect. And that's, you know, yeah, not surprising, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause we're not running Windows 10 S. See, that would be perfect.
Yes, it's perfect. Even Windows 10 S is not perfect. I have the bad news for
even.
You.
Even Windows 10.
Even.
If I could just run Windows 10 S on ARM, that to me would be the ultimate combination. God. Oh.
Wow.
Well, a Chromebook is a little more robust, but you give up a lot of functionality for that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you do.
That's how it works. And really, it's kind of amazing also given that we're operating with these massive legacy code bases. This stuff is, you know, you're running code from 1995. In many cases.
Probably earlier than that. You're running code from the Pepsi generation.
So whatever, you know, I still have that Harman Kardon thing. In fact, it was so funny because when I set up a new Windows machine, Cortana told me all my devices, including that. And I said, wow, I wonder where that is. Are they still selling that?
They're still selling them.
Wow. Yeah. It's the only Cortana.
It's still sitting
hardware,
out on the
right?
lot, Leo. Yeah, it's right. not like they're making them anymore.
They need a Black Friday Cortana. What do they call it? The Harman Kardon
Invoke.
They need an Invoke Black Friday deal.
They had one last year. I think it was fire sailed right from the beginning.
It was half off last year. Yeah. It was originally $200 and $100. Now it's $50 pretty much.
Oh, man. Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
If you could just stereo pair the things, I mean, you could almost make a case for it.
I know. They're a really nice speaker.
The sound quality is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Yeah. It's just the whole Cortana thing that's not any good.
Yeah. But speaking of Cortana.
Yes.
I see the Cortana RIP tour continues. What does that mean?
It's like just when you think there's no further indignity that Microsoft could for Cortana, they started selling Amazon Echo smart speakers from their store this week, both online.
This is akin to when Microsoft finally started selling Android devices. It's like,
kind of
capitulation.
It's actually exactly the same. You can find them side by side in Microsoft store.
Yeah.
And also, Skype and Alexa now work together too, which is kind of related, right?
Really?
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
You know what else works with Skype?
What?
My brand new Facebook. I mean, not Skype.
Oh, you have one of those Facebook things?
Brand new Facebook.
Oh, you do? Wow. Oh.
Look at that. May I call you?
Sure. I'm not on Facebook, though. Let me. Well, actually, probably on my phone.
Alexa, call Jerry.
Is not supported on this device.
Uh-huh.
Portal does have
Oh, these things are going to change the world. So, and now a slower way to make a phone call.
I don't know if you could hear that, but it said, I asked Alexa to make the call, and she said, well, calling with Alexa is not supported, but Portal does have its own method. I say, hey, Portal, call Jerry.
This is like a Facebook Messenger type call.
Yes. It uses, oh, I said yes. It uses, oh, man. Look at the size of that thing, too.
Mm.
Wow. We'll review this. I don't know if Jerry Stan Wagley is going to answer the, oh, he is. Hi, Jerry Stan Wagley.
Hi.
He's like, shouldn't you be working, Leo?
shouldn't you be working, he says. There it is. Look, I can see him.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
See how big he is? And then I can do this, too. And make him sideways. Yeah. But see, why would you do that?
I don't know.
No.
No. See, it's... Oh, just, there it is. Now it's better.
Oh.
But I kind of like... So what I did is I rotated it to landscape, but I kind of like it in portrait mode, actually. Because it looks like, you know, you're talking to a small version of Jerry on my desk.
Yep. Right, like you're sitting there on the table.
Yeah.
Like a little Keebler elf or something.
I've saved the box, and I'm of course going to pack it up and return it. But we'll review it first on Saturday on the new screensavers. Sure. What do you think, Jerry? Watch this. I can move out of the shot, and it follows me. Very slowly. Oh,
okay. Oh, wow. So for whatever it's worth, I just did a phone call like this on my Google Smart Display, not the Google one, the Lenovo one, which also, by the way, works in portrait mode.
It's following me everywhere. What I realize, people that creep people out that the Facebook thing follows you around, but I realize that's
actually... What do you think Facebook does?
Yeah, what do you think Facebook does?
It's a physical manifestation of the service.
But actually what I realized is that's not really what's going on. What's really going on is this is a super high-res 4K camera. Oh my God, he's turned into a dragon.
God, what has happened to our world?
I could do that too. He's a cupcake head. So that's kind of cool. I think that's kind of fun. But, I mean, you could do that with a lot of devices. Oh, my God. That's terrifying. He just did the nun. He's become the nun. Oh, my God. That's horrible. Slender Man is in my office. That is really creepy. I'm hanging up on you now. Goodbye. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
God, that was scary.
Well, Cortana can't do any of that, Leo.
No.
So.
But you also don't notice Facebook Portal devices in the Microsoft Store. So
Not yet.
Give maybe.
Not yet.
Interestingly, some Microsoft software in there.
I can still use this even though I had to activate my Facebook account to set it up. But then I immediately deactivated it. And it still works because... Facebook doesn't tell you this, but Facebook Messenger does not get deactivated when you deactivate Facebook. So I'm still using Messenger to call, but what I don't get is I don't get my photos.
Yeah.
So there's a photo frame, but it's going to be somebody else's photos. Maybe it'll be yours, Paul. It'll be fun. So I was saying the real point of this is not that the camera follows you around, I realized, is that they have a super high-res 4K camera that can see everything in your room in great detail. Nice. So...
Yeah.
Somebody at Facebook could say, well, what kind of phone is Leo using right now? Oh, that looks like an iPhone XS. I recognize the notch or something like that. I don't know if they're doing that, but why give them the chance, I guess, would be my point of view. So, but there is a Cortana mobile user interface, right? That's still in
Oddly enough, on mobile, they're advancing Cortana at kind of a nice clip. And I'd seen this on Android previously, but it's available on iOS this week. In fact, let me see if I have it on here right now. I do wrong computer. No, or wrong phone. But yeah, they have, I'll find it eventually. I only have 17 phones here. Just give me a second. But they've done a really nice UX change, and then they've added some capabilities as well. So if you've used Cortana in the past, you know, it's been kind of like this weird purple app. It's a lot better looking now. You should look at it again if you haven't. Actually, don't bother. It's terrible. But the point is, it's better than it was.
There's a ringing endorsement.
Yeah. I mean, look, if you, there is some synergy that occurs between mobile and PC, obviously, if you stick with the Microsoft stuff. So you can use the Microsoft Launcher, which I'll talk about later. Microsoft Edge, you know, if you can do the whole Cortana, I mean, their whole Microsoft experience if you want. And, you know, Cortana would be part of that, of course. And so the nice thing about Android is you could replace your built-in assistant, whereas on iOS you cannot. Although, did you see the fun little hack that Google came up with this week? Thanks to Siri shortcuts, you can now on Siri say, "Hey Siri, okay Google," and then it will. Oh, you can run Google routines or commands. And every phone in my office just lit up when I said that. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to recommend it. It's not a pick. It's not a pick,
thing.
It's a news item. You know, you might want to know about it.
I think what they need to do right now with Cortana, or very soon, is have a day where they explain what they are doing.
What is the
with
plan?
Cortana.
It looks like the plan is that Cortana is going to be kind of a second fiddle to all the other guys.
Yeah, as an end user thing, I think so.
Yeah,
right.
Baked in, right, to other stuff. Right.
I think there's a whole back end thing that Microsoft is going to always have a big role in, and certainly they can feed that stuff into Alexa. They should feed it into Google too, but whatever. I think I have not looked at any of these new build the you know the 19H1 builds yet, but apparently they're going to be kind of pulling Cortana out of that a little bit, right? That Windows Search will be kind of its own thing now. Mm-hmm. You know, like
that's good. I think that's actually good. I think that's very confusing combining those two the way they did.
Yep. I don't know. You know, I don't want to predict anything, but I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if with all the PC make, well, a lot of the PC makers going with Alexa, there's no real need to have Cortana in the box anymore. If you want your PC to be part of a whole house ecosystem where you can talk to things and control smart lights, whatever, you're probably going to choose Alexa.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Or Google, maybe.
Or Google. But assuming we can get that stuff going on the PC, you know, because the thing that would have to happen there is some agreement between the two companies.
Right. And so right now it's just Echo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mary Jo, you can go blow your nose because Paul is going to talk about Xbox.
I just hit Prestige 3, by the way, in Call of Duty.
Oh, my.
Thank you for asking.
Wait a minute. Isn't that pretty low for you?
It's still November, Leo. Give me a second. I noticed today that Call of Duty beat out Red Dead Redemption to be the best-selling game of October.
Wow.
Also, by the way, already the best-selling game of the entire year, despite the fact that it's only been in market for 3 or 4 months.
And there's nobody on the horizon. I mean, Fallout 76 came out already, so there's nobody else on the horizon.
Yeah, this is pretty much going to be it. Anyway, but as to actual news, Prestige 3.
that's pretty good news.
Brad had a great story about a coming cost-reduced versions of the Xbox One S that Microsoft's planning for 2019. I'm kind of working on a theory. I'm not even sure Microsoft needs to make an Xbox One S anymore, but I guess that assumes they can make the X cheap enough. But one of them will actually will not include a disk drive, right? So one of the ways you could save money in this thing is just not to have the drive.
Remind me, which is better, the S or the X?
The X is the 4K.
The S is the old one.
Yeah. So the Xbox One S, when it came out, I guess it was 3 years ago, was a cost-reduced version of the original Xbox. It was much smaller, much more attractive. It's the white one. It's a beautiful device, no doubt about it. And the diskless version of it, if you will, apparently looks exactly the same. It just doesn't have the disk slot. But of course, this raises an issue because a lot of people who are in the Xbox, you know, group or whatever, Xbox games, have purchased games on disk, and they're like, well, what am I going to do? How do I play these games? And Microsoft's actually going to have a program where you can send in your disk-based games, and they'll add those games to your Microsoft account. And so you'll be able to get them electronically going forward, which is awesome. And this is something everyone should take advantage of when it happens. But this will be one of the big 2019 announcements. So for right now, it's just kind of a, like, we'll call it a rumor, but this is what Brad has heard.
You know that this week is the 17th anniversary of the Xbox.
Oh, the original Xbox,
Jay Allard's tweet, this is on the 15th. Happy birthday, Xbox. Much love to the amazing team that built and carried on the spirit for the last 17 years.
I will I will never forget the announcement of this console. And Bill Gates was out on the stage with The Rock, who at the time was a wrestler. And I had never heard of this man.
Before he was presidential candidate.
Yeah. And he was he had a really commanding stage presence, right, obviously. But I'd never seen him before. And this
especially
was one
standing
of
standing next to Bill Gates.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And there was, you know, Bill Gates is kind of sitting there. He's like, well, I think. And then he kind of said, no one cares what you think, Bill. And then it was just one of those beautiful moments. And
can you smell who the Rock is dissing?
Yeah, there was a bunch of that stuff back in the day where Microsoft would bring people up on stage who were not from Microsoft. So one time they had like a drill sergeant guy. One time they brought on stage like someone from Ralph Lauren, which is something I shouldn't care about. But in this kind of boring Microsoft, you know, the keynote thing, all of a sudden there was a little bit of life. Yeah. It was so nice. Yeah. And The Rock was amazing for the Xbox announcement.
Well, that was the Times Square thing.
This was in a stadium. I think this was at...
because he says, I remember Times Square like it was yesterday.
Actually,
I was in Seattle for the Xbox launch.
This was in like a...
Tech TV did a thing from there.
Okay. I don't remember. It was in a stadium, I thought.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Can you explain Jay's tweet, though? Because I see some Xbox stuff. Why is this person screaming? Is she giving birth?
It's probably from an ad. And then that white thing at the bottom is the prototype.
It was going to be an X, a plastic X.
Yeah.
Green and then it wasn't. Light. No.
Because well, they sort of used a little, if you kind of put that back on its back,
yeah.
You know, the original box sort of looked like
sort
that.
Sort of, but yeah.
Oh, so maybe this that looks like it's a Microsoft store. I don't know what that is.
It's the Xbox elevator. I don't know what that is. And there it is. There's the Xbox. Wow.
All thank Sega for completely tanking in the video game market because that's the only reason Xbox happened.
And then Sony, is really going hard. They said, almost 20 million sold, which kind of surprised me because it's not really that many.
20 million.
Was it 17 million PlayStation 4s? I can't remember what they...
Oh, no, it's 86 million.
Oh, it's 86 million. Well, that's actually
that's as of September. They've sold... I bet they'll be 90-something, 92, 93.
They're selling a $200 PS4 with...
Yeah, just like Microsoft is, by the way. There's a
$200 deal? Oh, okay. Good.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll talk about that in a bit. That's part of the tip.
Don't want to tip your tip.
That's okay. And then the other thing that I'm actually surprised it took this long, but probably 3 years ago, Microsoft introduced a service called the Xbox Design Lab, which is up on Xbox.com. And basically, you go up and you can configure a controller. In fact, I have my Xbox Design Lab. It's all just basically. But, you know, and it has my little name on it. I don't know if you can see that. But
It says Pauly Boy.
So there's a stain on there. Let me get rid of that. Anyway. You can change literally every aspect of this controller. It's cool. And now you can do this right from your console. So there's an Xbox. If you go to the Xbox store, part of the dashboard, you can go down and design a controller. You can order it right on your console. If you do it, I think this is still happening right now. But over the, maybe it starts Friday, but there's a $10 off Black Friday thing happening on that.
Cool.
Sometime soon as well. Yeah.
Nice.
That's pretty good.
Nice. Nice. And I think maybe we should be time for a little time out. How about that? Mm-hmm. And then when we come back, we will have the tips, the picks, the beer, all the fun and games that you come to this show for. But first, a word from Prilox Security. Your security, of course, very important. We have a great IT guy. And he has locked our network down. You know, he has intrusion detection, he has firewalls and all that stuff. But what he can't really protect too well against is employees. That's really the weakest link, no matter what you're doing. And the other day I was talking to somebody in the Homeland Security field, and I asked him about ransomware. I said, is that still a problem? He said, oh, it's huge. He said, we see companies, shipping companies, just two shipping companies in the Bay Area just got ransomwared. And the way these attacks, 91% of these attacks happen is with a phishing email. The Maersk company, the shipping company Maersk last year, took a $300 million loss to ransomware. Sony Pictures Entertainment, right? a spear phishing attack, and that's really what the worst kind, because it's targeted employees. You know, the hacker learns something about your business structure, sends an email to the employee from, you know, the two bosses up, saying, "I need this turned around real quick. Here's the PDF, you know, or here's a spreadsheet. Open this up and fix it." And the employee goes, "Oh," and immediately not only infects the employee's computer, but the entire network. And you can bring the whole system down. So the employee, we got to do something about that. And really the only thing you can do is to train them. That's what Prilock Security does. It is a best of breed security training platform that does more than just a slide deck. I mean, this is really cool. So the first thing that happens, and by the way, you don't have to be an IT pro. You don't have to be a Russell to set this up. Anybody could do it with one click. They call it their one-click setup. Create a full year's training for whether it's 50 people or 5,000, doesn't matter. It's just less than a minute. And Prilock is very affordable because they have a very sophisticated network system using Amazon Web Services and so forth. And it means you're going to pay about 70% less than comparable services. So here's what happens. You set it up. Actually, go to prilock.com/twit. You set it up. First thing they do is a baseline test, a three-day test. Now, you don't tell your employees you're doing this. That's the fun of it. And your employees will get phishing emails, not from real bad guys, but from Prilock, but targeted. And that gives you some idea of how vulnerable you are. And I have to say, when you do it, you're going to go, "Oh, boy, yay, yay." Because they're going to click on links. They're going to download stuff. They're going to run programs. They're going to fill out privileged company information because these phishing scams are good. They're clever. So now that you know the baseline, you're going to get security awareness training. And I went through the training, and I gave it my two thumbs up. It's really exactly right. In fact, I was talking to Dan from Prilock. He said, "Well, a lot of this comes from, you know, Security Now and what I've learned from Twit." But it's really good stuff. The fun thing is you're taking the training, and nice young lady's teaching you, and a hacker breaks in, hacks into it. And then, and this is why this really works. You're being taught by a hacker. You're not learning rules, do's and don'ts. Those are do's and don'ts. Those are not flexible enough, because what you really need to learn is why hackers hack and how they think and what they're doing to trick you. And that's what they teach you. They have if you have a mandate for some compliance, they have a 10-question final assessment, so you can say, "Yes, you know, everybody's up to date." But that doesn't stop there. Then it schedules and runs throughout the rest of the year 24 additional random phishing attacks. And automatically enrolls people who fall for them into additional training, videos, and so forth. You'll get 24/7 analytics. You'll know always how savvy your people are, and the people who really need extra training are going to get extra training. This is so cool. If you're advanced, they have an advanced setup that lets you build your own phishing emails. Actually, the employees in the training get to build phishing emails, so they can kind of understand how these work to get you to do something, you know, how the psychology works. It really is great. The phishing tests include whether you opened the mail, whether you clicked a link, whether you downloaded an attachment, if you enabled macros on the attachment, and if you entered data for credential theft. So those are all the different levels. It's not just phishing, by the way. You'll learn about other ways hackers attack you. Things like what they call candy drops. I didn't even know this was a thing, but it is. They strew USB thumb drives around the neighborhood and the company parking lot and stuff. And the employees go, "Oh, look, somebody left a 64 gig thumb drive. That's awesome." They take it back to the office. They plug it in. "I got a free thumb drive and you got hacked." So they train you all this stuff, customer service reps and the kind of social engineering they're going to be subject to. Prilock offers 1-year security programs for companies of any size, as little as 25 people, $395. They also have, and this is really cool, and I don't know if anybody's done this. You should. If you have we all have that family member who constantly falls for this stuff, or a friend, and you tell them again and again. I know you don't, but you tell them again and again, and they fall for it every time. They have a single license gift card that's not very expensive, and it'll test them with 2 phishing tests a month for a year and give them the information they need to avoid in future. You can never learn all the ways hackers will con and trick you, but you can learn the psychology that's being used against your employees. Let Prilock show your employees how it works so they're not the next victim. Prilock, P-R-I-L-O-C-K, like privacy lock, prilock.com/twit. Oh, did I mention 30% off when you use my name, Leo? 30% off when you use my name, Leo. Somebody in the chat room saying, did anybody ever fix bad USB? That was the hack that modified USB drive firmware so that it could do, you know, it could inject. No, that's still around. Most of the USB thumb drives still vulnerable. That's why you got to do this. Prilock.com/twit. And now back to the show. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley wearing their Christmas sweaters. Just imagine. Just imagine they are. There was, I went to, you know, they have those PepCom events at CES, and they have one in San Francisco every year. They have a holiday PepCom, and the guys from uglysweaters.com were there. Oh, man. Oh, man, were they ugly.
You know, this is a good market, I think, for 8-bit sweaters.
They kind of look that way, really.
Yeah, you could have, like, the giant space invader logo, you know, creature on you or whatever.
Yeah. You, wait till you get our Christmas cards. They're prominently featured.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's start, Paul Thurrott. You had some tips for us?
Yeah, so 2 weeks ago I mentioned Brad's book, and I didn't give you the correct name, which is...
I was going to mention something.
Not below a surface, as I said. It's Beneath a Surface, which you can now pre-order from beneathasurface.com. I believe it comes out on the 29th, literally this morning at 9:25 a.m. I finished my edit of the book.
That's neat. You're editing it.
Yeah, I did like the first pass, which was kind of grueling. It's tough. Yeah, books are hard.
Yeah.
And then Brad went back through everything and yayed or nayed whatever I said. And then I did the second pass, which actually went much more quickly. So that was good. But yeah, I finished that up just today. It's great. And people who listen to this podcast are going to want to read this. It's a great story. And it's made me, I think I've said this before, it's made me kind of go back. I've watched some of the videos for some of these announcements. I've sort of rethought about some of these things. I'd forgotten, kind of blacked out that Mary Jo and I in particular are often kind of involved in these events somehow. Like, they'll come down into the audience and hand one of us a computer or something, or take my computer
they
like you did last time.
They do seem to like to, Panos likes to pick on you guys.
He does.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of funny. So it's been interesting reading that. And and I think, I know that people who like Windows Week are going to want to read this book. It's great.
Good.
I read it. Do you know I got to read it last week?
Oh,
weekend?
That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yep.
What'd you think?
Yep.
Did you like it? Enjoy it?
I did. I liked it enough that I spent all Sunday reading through the whole thing.
And you were there.
I was there. Yeah.
We both like the book because we're in it, here and there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And then Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley.
No, really, what I liked about it is I feel like the way we cover the news about something like Surface is so piecemeal. And then when you kind of see it all put together, it's like, okay, yeah.
Now it kind of makes sense, holistically.
Yeah,
that's exactly
right. Let's not give him too much credit. The point is, it's good. It's good. It's good.
It's a good, well done.
Well done,
and I think
Brad.
a good premise also. I am surprised no one else has done a book about Surface.
Is this Brad's first book?
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, that's exciting. He's not related to Sam's of Sam's Publishing, is he?
No, this is a new generation of Sam's Publishing.
Yeah. That might confuse some old timers like me. Sam's was a big computer book publisher.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
App of the week.
Actually, real quick though, I just wanted to mention it is Black Friday, which, by the way, Google, not a U.S. holiday, despite what it says on my calendar.
Wait a minute. Your Google calendar says Black Friday is a holiday?
Yeah, it's a U.S. It's colored exactly the same as Thanksgiving.
Man,
they're right next to each other.
You got
to
get a better calendar. That's.
I think our calendar says this on Outlook, doesn't it?
It's not okay. Minute.
I got to see my calendar.
No, on Outlook it says day after Thanksgiving, U.S. holiday.
Day after Thanksgiving. It's not a U.S. holiday.
It is. Right, a lot of people don't work.
No, but that doesn't make it.
It's not a legal holiday. Maybe it is. I don't know. Is it?
Oh, jeez.
Calendar says Black Friday, too.
Oh, wow.
It's a calendar I subscribe to called Holidays in the United States. Wow. Maybe I should
not a holiday.
Subscribe.
That's all
not
I'm
a
saying.
Holiday. Not a holiday.
It is a thing a lot of us celebrate. Whatever.
At least it doesn't say Cyber Monday on Monday.
Yeah.
Right. Well, give them time. Yeah. Oh, it's because Black Friday's a week now, isn't it? Like, it's an event.
It's a month.
Anywho, Microsoft, like everyone else on Earth, is having a Black Friday sale. And there are actually some awesome things to be had. So on Friday, you'll be able to get an Xbox One X for $400, which is incredible. Let me just bring this up because I had this. This is possibly the best one. It's a Surface Pro 6 with type cover bundle. And it's a good one. It's i5, 128, 8 gigs of RAM. $800, you know? A Surface Go with those specs, you can't get the good processor, is not much less than that. It might be $50 less. This is an incredible, incredible computer. It's a much better computer. Surface laptop will also be a couple $100 off on Friday. And they have a bunch of computers from third parties, like, you know, Dell, HP, Lenovo, et cetera, that will be on sale as well. Xbox games, you know, Xbox Game Pass is going to be $1 for the first month. Xbox Live Gold, I think, will be $1 for the first month. So be sure in your, as Microsoft tells me, there are 8 hours and 14 minutes until the Black Friday sale begins. So as we record this, that is. And so depending on when you're listening or watching this, you might be able to just get those. Yeah, so the Surface Laptop 2 is a, I think, is actually the same price off, it looks like, as Surface. No, it's $300 off. It's incredible. Yeah, it's a great. These are great prices. So if you were kind of holding off on some of these Microsoft devices, and also games, a bunch of Xbox games will be on sale as well. So just be sure to check that out. And then the app pick of the week, which I've actually not written up, but, you know, one thing I've been doing as part of my, you know, investigating whether it's possible to have Android without Google. Spoiler alert: no, it's not possible. But you can replace your launcher, and the Microsoft launcher is actually the one of the ones I really like the most. And it's not just because it's Microsoft, although I think there is something to be said for the integration between the work you're doing on a computer and then being able to access it on a phone in a really seamless way. This week they updated the Microsoft launcher beta, which you should be on, by the way, if you're using this thing, just to get the features early, with a bunch of things that kind of enhance what I just said, which is that integration between the desktop PC and the phone. So, for example, in that feed that's over to the left, you can integrate that with your to-dos from Microsoft To-Do, with your notes from Sticky Notes. And so it kind of gives you that thing that you're looking for, which is the ability to seamlessly sync whatever it is you're doing, wherever it is, to the mobile device that you have with you. So you have this stuff when you're on the computer, obviously, but now you can have it on the phone as well. So if you haven't looked at it, people who listen to the show in particular, I think, we're kind of coming at the world from a Microsoft point of view. I hate to say it like that, but, you know, a Microsoft influence, whatever. I think we'll find this this launcher to be really interesting. And it's also a nice peek at kind of Microsoft's evolving view of what a mobile user interface can look like, because obviously they don't have Windows Mobile anymore. It's not exactly the same, but I actually like the direction they're going with this quite a bit, so it's worth checking out.
Do you want me to play Microsoft's holiday ad?
Probably not. I assume it's terrible. I haven't seen it.
You know, Apple's was so good, and we played it yesterday on Break Weekly. I felt like maybe we should give equal time, although Microsoft's ad.
Having not seen this, I'm gonna predict something here.
Okay.
It's not going to be as good as Apple's.
Apple's is 3 minutes long, so it's already unfair because Microsoft's is only a minute.
All right, let's give it a shot.
All right, here you go. Microsoft's holiday ad 2018. Little boy comes running out the door. It's snow-covered. It's Lower Macungie Valley, I think. They're playing hockey in the street. Kids running.
You gotta see this!
So his friends are coming.
I just got a Cortana something.
Yeah. I got the Invoke! Was only
feel like, wait, what?
Oh, she's playing with a Microsoft controller there.
Actually, I think she had the old Xbox headphones on.
Yeah, the white ones. Oh. The whole family is running to see what Jimmy got. Oh, it's the adaptive controller.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, okay. Isn't that sweet? Really nice. Oh, so Timmy's in a chair, but he gets to play the adaptive controller, and his friends are all cheering, and I just got a holiday chill.
That's awesome. That's actually really nice.
When everybody plays, we all win. Give Wonder. That's the name of the... and that's sweet.
That's the country I want to live in.
Yeah. Where is that? I think it's Lower Macungie Valley. I'm not kidding.
Looks like it could be.
You should have been. Rednecks that live around here. This is nothing like that. No, it's
very sweet. All right, now.
And you know what? We'll get to ask somebody about that ad in a few weeks when we have our special holiday guest on.
I wonder who.
Who?
Some questions about slippery slopes for that man.
That's true.
And maybe he knows a German word.
Yes.
Oh, we're just teasing. We're just teasing. Now it's time for the Enterprise Pick of the Week with Mary Jo Foley.
Right. So this week, besides doing their big MSA security stuff, Microsoft also bought a company. They bought a company in Atlanta called FS Logix. FS Logix already was a Microsoft partner. They're an Amazon partner, a Red Hat partner, an IBM partner. What they do is help optimize usage of virtualization technologies. So what Microsoft's going to do with this is they're going to take the FS Logix technology and build it into their own virtualization stack, specifically around Office. So right now, Microsoft says one of the most virtualized apps, categories of apps, if not the most virtualized app, is Office. And, you know, they just announced at Ignite this Microsoft Virtual Desktop service, which is very much about virtualizing Office apps in a multi-user way on Windows 10. So they're going to take that technology, build this in, and they say they're going to make it even better, faster, and nicer to virtualize your Office apps. So that's something to look forward to. We don't know exactly how and when this will get baked in, but they've got the company now, and they say help is on the way for virtualizers everywhere.
Do you think it's like Black Friday for company acquisitions?
You know what?
If they have the word AI in their description.
So these guys don't have the word AI in there, which is interesting. But yeah, Microsoft tends to buy. I feel like they tend to buy companies whenever it's around a holiday or their earnings period. It's typically you see them buy somebody right around that time.
They just bought XOXO.
Yep. Yeah. That was an AI one, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. That's your Enterprise Pick of the Week. Now, here's another one.
Yes. This one is an AI Pick of the Week. Enterprise AI Pick. A week ago, Microsoft had an event where they talked about some of the things they're doing to help bring AI to business customers. And we didn't talk a lot about it. I mentioned a couple of the announcements from that event, but one I didn't talk about, which I think is going to be very interesting, is Microsoft is making some of its cognitive services, which are APIs to help people do things like vision and translation, all these kinds of AI, kind of add AI into your app stuff through APIs. They're taking those and they're going to put them in containers. And the thinking is, you're not always online when you want to apply these kinds of AI technologies to your app. Sometimes you're offline. Sometimes you want to bring it to the edge and apply it right into an edge device. So you're containerizing these cognitive services, and they're making it so that people, specifically developers, who want to bring these technologies into their apps can have the app in a container, have the API in a container, and just make this happen like magic and much more easily. Like if you're not somebody who's up to speed with Microsoft, what they're doing with cognitive services, it'll be already prepackaged and ready for you to use in a container.
This is why I like containers, is stuff like this.
I know, right? It makes a lot of sense. I'm like, oh, this is actually cool. And I think they're the first ones to try containerizing something to do with AI APIs. I think it makes a lot of sense.
Is it all Microsoft apps? Is it all Microsoft stuff? Or are they
All Microsoft cognitive services. So they have a lot of different ones, and they're always building out more. Right now, you can get the previews for key phrase extraction, language detection, sentiment analysis, face and emoticon detection, OCR and text recognition. And they say the next ones coming are speech and language understanding. Hmm. So you're going to have a full suite of these that you can try applying.
And after you do that, you might deserve a nice, cold, frosty beverage.
You might. So my beer pick of the week is something that's not even out until tomorrow. Bourbon County Stout, the 2018 vintage, comes out tomorrow on Black Friday. It always comes out in Chicago, which is where Goose Island is. There are a lot of different variants of Bourbon County Stout. They're all very big beers, boozy. They're all aged in bourbon barrels. They're all always very delicious. They have the original one that's in Heaven Hill bourbon barrels. They've got a reserve variation, proprietors. They've got a Bourbon County barley wine, which is even higher alcohol. Vanilla, coffee. And they have a one that I think is new this year, though I'm not entirely sure. They're calling it Midnight Orange Stout, which is like orange and chocolate flavors applied to your bourbon barrel beer. If you see any of these in your travels over the next month or so, it's definitely worth a try if you like bourbon, especially. They very much taste like bourbon. All of them are good.
Or you could just skip the middleman and get a bottle of bourbon.
You could. But, a beer. If you want a beer.
Yeah, but
if you want
more sugars in your drink.
Exactly. Why go for the simple?
A barley wine beer is like a salt lick is to a deer. It's just, you know.
Yep.
Goose Island Beer Company.
Which is owned by Anheuser-Busch, by the way.
But nevertheless has maintained its unique craft style. It's the same thing here at Lagunitas, which is now owned fully by Heineken. Fortunately, these big brands are smart enough to say, well, we bought a craft beer company. We're going to keep it a craft beer company instead of let's figure out a way to mass produce this sucker.
Everybody was worried. Everyone was worried when they bought them, but they've kept the beers consistent.
I'm going to, for my holidays, because we're going to have a variety of beverages tomorrow at Thanksgiving because we have a lot of different family members with different needs. And, in fact, one of them, Michael's dad is bringing Michael's grandfather's recipe for a gin fizz involving some sort of sherbet.
Oh, nice.
Is that good?
You've got to send that out. Got to put that out in the world, Leo.
Yeah, really?
Yep.
What do you call that? Is that a shrub?
A shrub has vinegar in it.
Oh.
Vinegar?
Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
This is how I destroy my life. Cocktails. It's like just going down this rabbit hole.
Well, I am. We have a new sponsor coming down the road called Hopsy. I don't know if you're familiar with these guys. They make it's like a mini keg.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And so for the beer drinkers, because there are a few of them, instead of getting a six pack, I'm going to have a little Hopsy keg.
Yep.
And I have some craft beer. I don't know which one I'm going to use. They have the Lagunitas, but I think I'll do something.
They have a little barrel that has whiskey in it because that would be good too.
Wouldn't that be cool? It's cute. It's like a little, it's hard to describe.
Like a pony keg kind of, right?
Yeah, it's a kegerator.
It's pony keg size. It's 2 6-packs. Yeah. But nice. And so we've got
It looks like it's like a 2-liter bottle almost.
Yeah. But instead of Pepsi, it's beer.
But instead of something terrible.
Yeah. So I have a few of them. And then, of course, you got to do, cold duck and wine and all that stuff. And it's going to be fun. And since I'm making a ham, which is pretty salty, I think there will be much grand consumption. And then we borrowed the 100-inch TV from the studio and set that up for the football games.
Nice.
Nice.
So this will be fun.
Sadly, you will have to watch Dallas and the Lions. But you know what? It should be okay.
It's a Thanksgiving tradition.
Sure.
Since 1865.
Or something.
I hope you guys have a wonderful, wonderful holiday. Enjoy yourself. Paul's getting two Thanksgivings, one tonight, one tomorrow.
This is a big thing for me, Leo, because this is the time of year that I actually, I'm going to eat stuffing. Like, I don't usually eat bread.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to town on this.
He's going off the carb.
You have to.
Yep. So I'm making, I've never done it before. You probably shouldn't make a recipe for the first time ever. But I wanted to, because we're not doing a turkey, there's nothing to put in the burr, there's no. So I said, I'm going to make a cornbread and sausage stuffing, a southern style.
Sounds good.
I thought that sounded good. So I made one batch of cornbread last night. I'll make another batch today. And then you take this cornbread and you make it stale in the oven.
Yeah.
You stalify it. And then you chop up celery and chop up onions, and chicken broth and variety of stuff. Maybe a little rum. All right, everybody. Have a wonderful holiday. Have a happy Thanksgiving. Thank you, Paul Thurrott. You'll find his work at Thurrott.com. Mary Jo Foley at AllAboutMicrosoft.com, her ZDNet blog. And, man, they've blessed us this year with so many good shows.
Yes. Yes.
I'm grateful for you.
Grateful.
Aww, grateful
for you. I am, honestly. And because you do all the work and I just sit here. drink my beer.
I wouldn't undermine your role in this podcast.
You don't have to. When the ball pops, it'll happen all by itself. If you want to watch us do it, we'll be back next week. Yeah, sure. No holidays. Don't stop us. You know, it's sad, Paul. I was just thinking, isn't Black Friday the day you and your son would get up at midnight?
No, so that was Call of Duty night. We were just if you can hear my dog barking, it's because my son literally just walked in the door for Thanksgiving. But so we used to go to Best Buy at midnight and buy the latest Call of Duty game every year, and then eventually, I guess, starting with the Xbox One,
you got the digital downloads.
It's all digital. So yeah. I would still wake him up when he was living at home. We'd get up at midnight and we'd still play. But
cute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, well, you go see your boy. And
yeah.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. We do Windows Weekly every Wednesday, about 11 a.m. Pacific. Sorry. Hope you feel better, Mary Jo. 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That is 1900 UTC. If you want to watch us live, go to twit.tv/live. And you can watch. If you're doing that, you should probably go into the chat room at irc.twit.tv and chat with the other people who are enjoying the show. If you want to visit us in studio, you can do that too. We got some nice studio audience. Came here in the rain to watch the show. Just email tickets at twit.tv. We'll make sure there's a chair ready for you. You can also get on-demand audio and video of everything we do at twit.tv. In this case, twit.tv/WW for Windows Weekly. And you can download copies there, or if you want, I think maybe the best thing to do would be subscribe, and that way you'll get every episode the minute it's available, kind of automatically. You won't have to go anywhere. It'll just be there waiting for you to play. You can also use Cortana or Siri or Google or Amazon and ask your voice assistant, hey, I'd like to listen, or I'd like you to play. People get mad at me because I say listen to Windows Weekly podcast. And they say, no, it's play Windows Weekly. But either one works. Play Windows Weekly podcast. Somebody's calling me on my portal. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and we'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.